following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Another Tuesday, and of course that means another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. He's made his way down the mountain, avoided as much snow as possible, but made his way back to Statesboro as Georgia Southern men's basketball will be inside Hanner Fieldhouse to take on the Trojans of Troy as Georgia Southern women's basketball will head to Trojan Arena over in the Yellow Hammer State. But first things first, how was the trip up the mountain?
Okay, we got there on Thursday, and look, it's January in Boone. We make the joke all the time. It seems that it's always cold up there, but there wasn't any snow on the ground. Even though it had snowed up there on Tuesday, I talked with Harrison Battle, the radio voice, and he said that it came down pretty good. He talked about it during their Mountaineer Talk, their edition of their coaches show just a couple of days before. And I had a chance to see him on Thursday night before the doubleheader began, and it started to snow right around midnight. Wake up the next morning, and the ground is just covered, like what you would normally expect in Boone anytime you go there that time of year. And we kept looking at the forecast wondering if we were going to be able to play. And look, we were already up there. Their capacity was set at 85 anyway for players getting tickets and then just a couple of other people. They're pretty strict up there in North Carolina. I was wondering about the officials because I'm not sure their travel's like. And knowing that you've got one crew Friday and another crew Saturday, if that was going to be any kind of concern, but we kept checking outside. It snowed all day, so there were a good 6 inches on the ground by the time that we left to go for game one. And then when the snow stopped for Saturday, we heard that there were ice warnings.
Uh-oh.
And you don't want to be in a bus coming down a mountain when there's stuff on the ground that you can't see. As much as Bill has driven the bus in more than 20 years as a part of Eagle Nation, but fortunately it didn't get to that point. And outside of having to make one stop on the way back on Saturday, it was pretty smooth considering what it could have been.
We've had a couple of different times, and we were talking about it just a few minutes ago, about how there have been a couple of times over the years of going to Boone where weather has altered the path. A couple of years ago, you had a winter storm coming through that made us shift the trip, but it turned out to be a pretty good trip for Georgia Southern.
Old Winter Storm Jonas back in January of 2016. That was the game that moved to a Monday. We had to go up there on a Sunday because we were going to Little Rock that Thursday. So once we had gotten back, it was one day to chill, and then we were right back on a plane to head out to play Little Rock, which at the time Brian Berg was an assistant coach at under head coach Chris Beard. But that was the 101-100 game where Mike Hughes scored 12 points in the last 3 minutes of the game. He hit the four-point play with right around a second left, and then he made the free throw. I mean, he had to make the free throw. You just don't make the three to tie the game and then miss the free throw and force us to go to overtime, because then you're, come on, man. that was a pretty wild night, though.
The best part of that video, and I didn't realize it until we went back and watched it the next day or so, the best part is when you used to be on the floor in Boone, you can watch Mike Hughes' shot and the celebration by the team, but I think you and I were about as excited as anybody on that floor.
Yeah, my right arm and your left arm became like a licorice whip after he made that shot. And then we talked to Coach Biden on postgame, and he said, I didn't even see it go in. I was like, come on, Mark, just lie for me. Act like you saw it go in. It typical Mike, because Mike was only a sophomore that year. The year before, he had gotten into the starting lineup. He was a guy, but he wasn't the guy. And granted, that was Tukey Brown's freshman year. Ike and Monte, they all came in that year. Mike ended up being the guy during conference play that year, scoring about 18 points per game. But having him on post, it would have been just like any other game, any other night. He was just so calm. Being from Winston-Salem, it was meaningful. His grandmother was there that night. But he was like, yeah, he did let me land. And the way they call the game now, that's a foul. So I went to the line. I won the game.
He is still going to be the best, worst shot shooter I've ever seen.
He's the one guy on the floor where when he took a shot, it didn't matter what it was. It had a chance to go in.
Oh, yeah.
And he became that way. As a freshman, he was still so quiet. That group was like a rec league team. They were a bunch of older guys. They were scored about 60 a game, great on defense. But then by the time he got his bearings as a sophomore, he made the league realize, look, you need to guard me until I'm about 30 feet in, because if not, I'm going to shoot it, and it's probably going to look weird, but it's probably going to go in.
No matter where he let it go, he was convinced that it was going in.
No, he's a great guy. Great guy.
As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A couple of sports getting going in the spring portion of 2021. Georgia Southern men's tennis will start off their portion of the season at Auburn on Sunday. It'll be a 9 a.m. first serve over from Auburn, Alabama. Women's tennis will get going as well on Saturday. They make their way up to the Mid-State to take on the Mercer Bears. It'll be a 1 p.m. first serve for Georgia Southern women's tennis. And then swimming and diving will host UNC Asheville on Saturday and Sunday, a two-day meet at the rack. That'll go all day throughout the morning and afternoon for Georgia Southern women's swimming and diving. One thing that we've talked about a little bit on the podcast is the new soccer coach for Georgia Southern women's soccer, Chris Adams. Finally got the opportunity to meet him yesterday, and you know it's going to be a good relationship whenever the first time you've met him, one, he says, hey, are you Colin?
That's going to go one of two ways.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this is going to go. But then later on in the conversation, you start quoting Step Brothers.
In the first conversation?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Chris Adams. He's going to do a lot of good for Georgia Southern and Eagle Nation.
Put him and Eric Reasoner together, you may not put them apart.
Yeah, when we were up in Newark, and I'd met Eric before, but hadn't really talk to him all that much, but whenever he and I were on the bus going to the airport the second time, and he starts quoting Mitch Hedberg, I knew this was going to be a friendship that was going to last a while. We're going to get to Georgia Southern basketball. Women's basketball was at home against Appalachian State. Started on Friday with the victory 87-56 over the Mountaineers, and the Eagles jumped out to a 22-5 lead in the first quarter and really took the wind out of the sails for Appalachian State. Tatum finishes with 14 points, 4-4 from behind the arc. She struggled a little bit the last couple of weeks trying to find herself in a new role, but now really getting things going, double-digit scoring in both of the games this weekend. Jayden Hamilton finished with 16 points. And it's something that we talked about a little bit last week of with the back-to-back, you wonder how teams, if you get down by a good portion in the second half, if you start conserving the energy. And while Angel Elderkin of Appalachian State is never going to wave the white flag and give in, it almost felt like you saw her empty the bench a little bit earlier than she normally would. And you saw people getting more minutes than they usually would trying to get ready for Saturday. And like we talked about last week, you wonder if that's going to become the norm now that you're playing Friday, Saturday.
The good thing is that can serve a double purpose. You get a chance to get some people, not necessarily their first experience, period, but more experience in case you might need them for the next day. And you're conserving energy for the people that you know are going to play. And we had mentioned with South Alabama the week before on the men's side that, look, in game one, they had six guys that played. They were up by 29. I thought that they could have pulled some of those guys out a little bit earlier, but they only dressed nine for a number of different reasons. So even though some of those guys got in the final couple of minutes, they didn't really have a whole lot of depth to go to. And then the second game, which was nip and tuck up until about 14 minutes left, the legs went, they couldn't make their jumpers. You could just see that they weren't the same team just because physically they couldn't perform to that level, and Georgia Southern benefited to win by 13. But granted, the Eagles were playing 11, 12 guys, and only one guy in that first game played more than 30 minutes, just like what happened on Friday against App State.
So it was an 87-56 victory for the women over App State on Friday. Moved on to Saturday, fell to the Mountaineers 70-58. Appalachian State jumped out to a 25-18 lead after one quarter, and you really felt a change of the energy of Appalachian State. Georgia Southern controlled the game the entire way on Friday, but Appalachian State came out, and you almost felt like they took it a little bit personally that they lost to Georgia Southern by almost 30. And
wouldn't you?
Well, right. But
if you would have lost to App State by 30, wouldn't you have felt a little bit personal?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But a complete change of their bench. It was every bucket, especially in the first quarter. The entire bench was up, cheering everybody on. Brooke Biggett really took off the game. 17 points, a lot of those coming in the first half. Had 5 threes. Pree Stanley, who only scored 3 points on Friday after averaging 18 coming into the weekend, she goes for 13 on Saturday. Tatum did finish with 16. 2 more threes on Saturday for her, but it just felt like Georgia Southern ran out of gas. But a 70-58 victory for App State on Saturday, so you split the weekend again. And all the way through Sun Belt play, every team has split both weekends.
On the women's side?
Yes.
I noticed, and I didn't realize this, I was talking about the two series on the men's side that ended up getting knocked out because of COVID, which we'll get to in a moment, but I didn't realize that that was the same for the Georgia State women.
Georgia State women have not played in conference yet.
Yeah.
Because they've been knocked out for the past 2 weeks. Chad Jackson came up with a deep dive, and when I get an email from Chad saying, deep dive incoming, I knew this is going to be a good email.
Then you just got to find where the diving board actually is.
Correct. But
hey, how high does that ladder go, man?
He's never coming down. But with everything being back-to-back, Georgia Southern has split, of course, their first two. Going back, the only time that Georgia Southern was able to sweep a pair of back-to-back was the 2004 SoCon tournament when Georgia Southern beat UNC Greensboro and East Tennessee State. Won East Tennessee State in overtime back on March the 3rd and 4th of 2004. Since then, they played 26 times back-to-back days and have either split or been swept in those.
Jeez.
And it's something that we talk about a lot with baseball, and we touched on a little bit last week, that it's so difficult to win back-to-back days against the same team within 24 hours in a lot of cases. But I think it just goes to show what you're expecting in now 2021 for basketball, really on both sides, because I think you and I talked about it. And outside of Jay Walker, I think everybody around the league was in agreement that 10-8 may be winning the league.
The one thing I will say for baseball is the rosters are so big and the pitching staffs are so big that you can throw out different arms.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of guys that you could go to. Game one, most of the time you've got your best. You get the victory. You come back. It's your number two, but maybe some of those top arms out of the bullpen that didn't go from the night before. So from that standpoint, I can see baseball being a little bit more likely. Basketball, whatever you travel with, that's what you have. There isn't some kind of magical combination that is just going to magically change things. You travel with 12 to 15, you're going to play with 12 to 15. There's no pitch count. There's no sacrificing a runner or anything of that ilk.
Oh, you start talking about sacrificing a runner over, you start getting me excited for baseball.
Look, I know we're about 5 weeks out, and I know we're on the verge of seeing a schedule maybe sometime in the next few minutes. Literally the next few minutes, because
right,
this coming out Tuesday morning, there's a chance that there's supposed to be a meeting today with the Sun Belt Conference athletic directors regarding the final stages of being able to set an actual schedule for 2021. And we know that some schools have put theirs out already, but until the conference itself can agree on, okay, this is our format, whether it's just going to be, now we're going to go to four-game series, which has been talked about. Various leagues have said that, and I don't think it's going to come to that. But if it does, then things are going to have to change for the teams to put their schedules out. But then on the other side, if it's going to be proceed as usual, those teams that have been sitting on schedules can say, plan accordingly.
And one of the good things I like the way that the Sun Belt has kind of been rumored about, a lot of leagues are doing four-game series on the weekend, but they're doing a doubleheader on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
The way that the Sun Belt is going to do it, they're going to do a four-game series if they get to that. The only way they do a four-game series is over 4 days. And I think that makes it a little bit more conducive to not have so many doubleheader splits and being able to – and I know a four-game series sweep is pretty out there, but it still makes it a possibility when you do it over 4 days.
And that would tie in with the likely reduction of midweek games. You're thinking, okay, that's going to be too much class time missed. Well, if you're taking the midweek games out of the equation, you're not worrying about a Tuesday or a Wednesday where they're having to be somewhere, then you can add that day to the weekend. If you need to go to Troy or App State for four, you leave Wednesday. Yeah, you're going to miss Thursday, Friday, but that kind of comes out in the wash if you just remove the idea of the midweek game. But we'll wait and see what actually happens, and we'll hopefully have a schedule here momentarily.
And one of the good things about a couple of the other conferences coming out with what they're going to be doing for this year, nobody has completely eliminated non-conference play yet. So everything that Georgia Southern had penciled in for a schedule is still in play. Now, there may be games here and there that may get axed as we go throughout the season and what the schedules actually look like. But as of right now, everything that was penciled in for Georgia Southern baseball is still on the table, and we will find out over the next couple days.
Yeah, I'd love to be as optimistic as possible and say that we're going to get as close to 56 as we can, and we still might, but it may not be the way that it is designed right now. Look at what Georgia Southern football had to do. You lose Boise State, you lose Ole Miss, Army gets added during the summer, UMass gets added a week and a half before, but somehow you still get to 12 plus the bowl game, which nobody else nationally was able to do.
All I ask is if we add Army to the baseball schedule, let's do it here. That'd be a little chilly.
It is... I got to see a little bit of the baseball field, and while it's nice, it's not Mikey Stadium.
No, and it would be much nicer if it was 70 degrees.
You know they consistently play the Yankees in exhibition play.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Because
it's already up. Well, you're already up there.
Yeah,
they've beaten the Yankees a few times.
Wish the Braves could say the same.
Aw.
Yeah. It's all right. We'll get there. Back to Georgia Southern men's basketball. Up atop the mountain in Boone on Friday, fell 66-63. This is one that came down to the final seconds of the game. Led by 10 at the half, as many as 16 in the second half, and led this game until just under 2 minutes into the game. And you had Prince Toyambi ended with 12 points, 11 rebounds for a double-double. But Aaron and I pulled it up just after the women's game had finished up in the last couple of minutes of the game, and that one was a tough one to swallow for Georgia Southern.
I liken the weekend to a remote control car. Because what do you need to put in the remote control car? You need to put batteries in the car, right?
Correct.
You're in the car. It's racing around the living room, jumping over books, you know, going in and out of coffee tables. You're having a grand old time.
Uh-huh.
But after a while, you realize the car isn't going the way it was at first. You realize you didn't check the batteries. He didn't make sure that they were fully charged.
Ooh.
The Eagles did a lot of good things. We talked about this with Coach Berg on Inside Georgia Southern Basketball on Monday night. They did so many good things. They made threes. They had assists. They were getting stops. There were two separate instances they held App without a field goal for more than 6 minutes, one in each game. You do that most of the time, you're gravy. But for whatever reason, that car stopped going at the speed that it was going in the first half. In game one, App doesn't take the lead until there's 8 seconds left. Turnovers ended up being Georgia Southern's undoing. And then in game two, while they were awesome from three before halftime, Gedi Uzupitis knocking down three, Kamari Brown knocking down three. They were 10 of 19 before halftime. That dried up like it did in game one. But in this instance, in game two, the Eagles had a chance to take this game because they rallied from six down themselves with under 3 minutes left. They came back to tie the game. You mentioned Toyambi. He had the tip back in game two to tie the game at 71. But just like game one, App ended the game on a 7-0 run. App ended game two on a 6-0 run. Batteries weren't fully charged.
We talked about last week how disciplined this Appalachian State team is under Coach Dustin Kearns, and it really seemed like that was what came back to bite Georgia Southern towards the end.
Look, I can sit here and talk about their foul numbers all I want to, and yeah, they went into the weekend fourth fewest fouls per game nationally. Two things. In game two, they didn't commit their third team foul until there were less than 3 minutes left in the game.
Wow.
I don't know the last time that's happened. Maybe it has. But to look up there and consistently see that late in the half in game where it's 0-1 or 2 fouls, it was a tough number to not watch change while Georgia Southern's kept getting 7, 8, 9 double bonus and App. The free throw totals for the two games, App ended up going 30 out of 43 in two games for 70%. That's a little bit south of what they've been on the season, but for them, that's pretty good. Georgia Southern was 11 of 20. So App went to the line twice as much as the Eagles in two games, made 10 more than Georgia Southern attempted. In two games that were decided by a combined 9 points.
You found it.
That's it. That's it. And granted, Georgia Southern didn't make theirs late for the few times they got there. They shot 2 free throws in the entire second half on Saturday, and they didn't come until 18 seconds left.
Wow.
There's a rule of thumb that you want to try to even out the fouls. Look, that doesn't mean you're looking for fouls to call. Oh, if they have 7, they have 2. Oh, no, we got to bring this one up a little bit. No, you have to have a consistent whistle. That's part of a rhythmic basketball game. That's part of an up-and-down game. That's part of a reasonably called game. But when it's 9-2 with just over 3 minutes left, that's tough to overcome. Because you know they're going to the line that much more, then you're not getting to go because you're not getting the same whistle, so to speak, as whoever it is with the basketball.
It was a 66-63 falling of Georgia Southern on Friday, fell 77-71 on Saturday to the Appalachian State Mountaineers. It'll be a 6 o'clock tip-off against the Trojans of Troy on Friday for Georgia Southern men's basketball inside Hanner Fieldhouse. 3 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday for Georgia Southern and Troy as well. One thing before we step aside for Eagle Tales, wanted to touch on. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize with so many new faces, and especially in a COVID year where you've got to maintain your distance and whatnot, but
like we are recording this.
Correct.
And like we've had to do every coach's show this year.
Correct. Oh, if people could see the setup. But you and I have to learn all these new people as well. Like part of what makes it able for us to do what we do is getting to know who we see each and every day. And I think that's part of the beauty of being a team's radio person. You're with them every day. You see every game. You see everything that happened. And one thing that we get to do now with Inside Georgia Southern Basketball, got to visit with Kamari Brown. And really, truly, that's the first time I had gotten the opportunity to be around him kind of one-on-one.
It
was two-on-one.
He's one of the 9 new guys. And that's the 4th highest of any Division I team. There's more than 350 of them, even though about 50 of them are in the process of a COVID pause at this point. But he is somebody that he has one dream. It was to play Division I basketball. He's here. He's doing it. So whatever Brian Berg and that staff says, he's going to buy into. He spent 2 years in junior college at Panola in Texas. We knew about the athleticism. We knew about his ability to shoot the basketball. We knew about what he could do on defense. But the kind of person that he is, you want quality people in your program. He goes above and beyond what a quality person is. He went through an extremely difficult shooting stretch up until game 2 against App on Saturday. But once that first one went in, then he hit back-to-back threes towards the end of the first half, and there's nobody on that team that needed that ball to go in the hole from deep more than Kamari Brown.
Looking at the conference as a whole, we touched on it a little bit earlier how Georgia State on the women's side has yet to play a conference weekend. Both of their first 2 weekends have gotten wiped out because of COVID-19 concerns. On the men's side, Georgia State and Troy were supposed to be playing this past weekend. That one got wiped out earlier last week. And for Georgia Southern to have 4 games already under their belt, about to play 5 and 6 hopefully this weekend against Troy, I think we talked about it pretty much every week, how you're happy to have the number of games that you do for Georgia Southern football. Now you can say the same thing for Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball, that you haven't really had COVID affect you up to this point and find some wood to knock on.
And being in the testing bubble, as you are with women, I am with men, it's been 3 times a week, and having to do that instead of just a Wednesday morning over at the FOC with everybody involved in the football bubble, it's definitely smaller. I think it's 25 guys altogether that have to get swabbed three times a week. The difference here is that these guys get tested morning of, and that's the rapid test where they can see literally within 15 or 20 minutes, are you go, no go, and knock on wood, everything has been really good to this point that Georgia Southern added a game. They're not games behind. They've added a game. They had that week and a half within the middle of exams, but they were looking for a game to fill on that December the 5th, that Saturday, and USC Upstate was supposed to play Eastern Kentucky. That had gotten bagged, and Spartanburg's 3 hours, pretty much due north of here. So that was a perfect opportunity to get the team on the road for the first time, get a road victory, and start 3-0.
It's crazy to think that women's basketball is fully on schedule. Men's basketball is ahead of schedule. That sounds so odd to say in a COVID year, but
in one point where Statesboro was considered a national hotbed.
Right. The president of the United States mentioned Statesboro as one of the hotbeds.
And it wasn't talking about the song.
No.
He was talking about the actual city. Everybody knows the song, but the actual city, the town of Statesboro, Georgia, was uttered by the president of the United States.
Yeah, the Allman Brothers were not part of that speech.
No, Blind Willie McTell was not on the script that day.
Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball will have Troy coming up this weekend, women on the road. Men at home, we will dive into the Trojans a little bit later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but now we pause for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, we've combed through a lot of people over weekly editions of Eagle Tales, but one that we haven't talked about, but one that I'm sure a lot of older people remember is former team dentist Hudson Powell. Now, for somebody that takes a look at as many chompers as he did, there's got to be some stories.
Hudson was probably a doctor that couldn't stand hurting his patients. If he stuck his finger in and you flinched, he would want to rub it with some type of topical anesthetic to numb it so that he didn't hurt you. And he always tried to numb your gums before he injected it with Novocaine. And then he'd come in one of them drills. It felt like he stuck a DeWalt down your throat and, you know, a little jackhammer beating on your teeth. But Hudson wanted to be the most gentle dentist you could ever work around. His main compadre now, Jared Walton, is not bad. Jared's been, you know, taking care of my teeth since Hudson left us, and I would like to think that Jared's probably still our lead dental person. Back in the good old days, we surrounded ourselves with good people and good things happened.
I am fully convinced that...
I don't even know what you're going to talk about, but I like when you say that.
But I'm fully convinced that you could essentially draw... Have you ever played the game Cards Against Humanity?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure you could take any of those cards, hand it to Roger, and he has a story about it. Or he's going to tie one in somehow. We've talked about the 6 degrees of separation that we're looking for people to send in. We need to do a 6 degrees of stumping Roger. If somebody send in a topic for a story that Roger doesn't have one for.
He's got so many connections, though, with baseball, with umpires, with...
The best one he tells about umpires is Tim McClellan and the George Brett.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to...
to watch him watch the video and give you the play-by-play of George Brett coming out of the dugout at Tim McClellan is one of the best.
And Tim McClellan was a rookie umpire that year.
Yes.
For the whole career that he had to think that was extremely early on. But, yeah, he's worked as a bus driver. He's worked as a mechanic. He works in operations. So there's – that fishing pole goes in a lot of different ponds.
That's a very good way to put that. Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball will continue the conference slate against the Trojans of Troy for Georgia Southern women's basketball, heading to the Trojan Arena to take on the 5-4 Trojans, 1-1 in conference play. They were part of Georgia State's COVID concerns as their weekend this past weekend was wiped out because of Georgia State and their COVID concerns as well, but played Appalachian State on the opening weekend of conference play, and Appalachian State actually knocked off the Trojans 78-66 on that Friday edition on New Year's Day. Came back to defeat the Mountaineers by 20, 85-65 on Saturday. But this is a typical Troy team under ninth-year head coach Shanda Rigby. Obviously, the preseason favorite in the league had 9 of the 12 first-place votes. And so it's a typical Troy team. They're going to be up and down. They're going to press you from wire to wire. There's going to be a lot of points scored. There's also going to be a lot of points given up. For Troy individually, though, Alexis Dye, the senior out of Birmingham, is really what has led them to transfer in from Gulf Coast State College a couple of years ago, averaging 18 points a game, 10 rebounds. There's two Trojans averaging 10 or more rebounds, as Filmus Coringa is averaging 10.5 rebounds per game, the transfer in from Tyler Junior College. And so a lot of size down low, a lot of running, a lot of points, and it's exactly what you would expect from a Shanda Rigby type team.
And looking at some of the scores between the Eagles and the Trojans these last couple of years, those have been very entertaining games. I can remember a couple of those at Hanner that were on the verge of going into the triple digits in right around late in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that style has worked quite well for Georgia Southern in the essence that they've been able to score. I know oftentimes it's very difficult to keep up with a team that does it as much as Troy does, but those have been some entertaining games.
And it's interesting, too. We talked about it with Coach Anita Howard last night on the Inside Georgia Southern Basketball new edition at the Bishop Fieldhouse, but it's very similar to the style that Coach Howard wants to run in Statesboro, and you're seeing more of it this year of the full court press a lot. You're seeing more of it of trying to get out and transition a little bit more. And so it's almost plays into Georgia Southern's favor, but the way Georgia Southern's trying to play also plays into the favor of Troy, too.
I believe that a lot of teams this year are more experimenting with stuff that they wouldn't because of how many games they've had to play against non-Division I competition. And even with the men, look, most of the time you'd have to play a max of 2. The league statutes say you can't have any more than 2 non-D1 games, but they waived that because of COVID this year. So for Georgia Southern, 4 of the 13 games have been against non-Division I, and you got to be careful what you do in those games because, look, most of the time you're going to blow them out of the water. It's going to be a 50, 60, 70-point win. But you don't want to confuse yourself by thinking that, okay, because it works against NAIA National Christian School, that I'm going to be able to do this against Sunbelt School. But maybe you find something that does, and you can build upon that, but you don't want to get into an instance of fool's gold and think, well, this was what I was going to stake my claim on, when in actuality it was just because the competition was that imbalanced.
And going into this game, it shows a little bit of favor for Georgia Southern of Chad Jackson put out the NCAA stat report earlier on Monday that Georgia Southern in 6 different categories is in the top 20 in the country. Number 3 in free throw attempts, number 4 in free throws made, number 5 in rebounds, which really is going to be key against this Trojan team, number 5 in the country in steals, 15 in steals per game, and 19th in turnovers forced. And you really start to see the pressure that Georgia Southern, especially around the perimeter and a half-court set, that Georgia Southern's trying to do is really starting to pay off dividends now for this team.
Whenever you said rebounding, I thought 2 things. Shondell Vickers.
Yes. Yes. Without a doubt. She was the 2nd of 2 back-to-back in the Sunbelt Players of the Week. Was the Player of the Week the previous week, and then Aitiana Galden the week before that. The first time that Georgia Southern women's basketball had back-to-back Players of the Week since the early 90s. And you bring up a name like Tarsha Askew, you know it's been a few minutes. But for the men's side against the men of Troy, as Barry McKnight says, first off, you're just going to get to see Barry McKnight, and that makes me both happy and a little jealous.
We were exchanging messages as I was coming back down the mountain. We did a little bit on Monday, and he does the ESPN Plus for their home basketball games. Doug Amos fills in on the radio for him. But just to be able to listen to him is so great.
It's so soothing.
It's just so great.
It's one of those that he needs to make a CD, and I don't know if anybody makes a CD or an album of anything anymore, but he needs to make a CD for everybody around the league of the books that he read during the quarantine, especially, what was it, Wonky Tonky Donkey?
I can't even do it.
I can't even talk about it. Yes. Whatever the actual name was, yes.
It was something to that nature.
And you know who his production assistant was for all those?
Adam Prendergast?
Close.
Ooh.
his wife.
That's incredible.
And it was her birthday yesterday.
It was. Happy birthday.
But when he told me that, because I would have assumed it would have been Adam, too.
Yeah, I thought it was Adam.
But apparently he read a lot of those from his back porch.
Of course he did.
When he wasn't at Riddle Pace Field or Trojan Arena or Veterans Memorial Stadium, he was doing them from his back porch.
Barry is one of the best people. And he's a lot like Steve Masterman Smith. And I never thought I'd be comparing Barry McKnight and Steve Masterman Smith. But we've talked about it before, how Steve has done pretty much everything that a human can possibly do as far as job-wise. Barry's a little bit in that mold, too. We've talked about his days in minor league baseball, was a part of Jeopardy at one point. He's a member of Mensa and an absolute genius.
Yeah, the Jeopardy stuff came up last week, and he posted his picture with the now late Alex Trebek because the episodes that just came out were Trebek's final episodes hosting, and I think it was within just a week or two before he actually passed away. And to know that Barry was a part of that and competed on the show, that I'd like to get him on the podcast at some point to talk more about that.
Oh, don't worry, we will eventually.
And we'll go through, we'll go down the list of guys in the league, and we'll just get them on and have them tell their stories.
Is Jay Walker the only one that we've had opponent radio?
Actually, on the podcast itself, yeah. I think so.
Because Jay came on a couple of years ago to talk about the history of the Sun Belt Baseball Tournament, because he's the mayor, the governor, whatever you want to call Jay.
Well, the stuff he'd be able to talk about, you wouldn't find on the Sun Belt website.
Weird. Jay had a pretty exciting game this past week on Friday.
I'm not totally convinced he didn't have a hand in that.
I'm never going to be convinced that if something happens in Lafayette, that Jay Walker, Craig Melanson, or Dan McDonald had some kind of hand in it.
The lights didn't go out in their first game against Little Rock, which came down to the final possession. They turned red. They didn't go out. They just got a little bit darker, and they turned red. But the game was never stopped. And then Darrell Walker, the head coach for Troy, is going nuts at the end saying, why didn't you stop the game?
He turned red, too.
Yeah. And I just think that when it happened, it was so sudden and so surprising and so late in the game, they didn't know what to do. I wouldn't have been in that position.
No.
I don't know what Jay said when it happened on the air. I don't know what Ray Tucker said when it happened on the air. But I wouldn't mind getting a copy of those air checks.
Yeah, that's one. A lot of times after, like, national championships and stuff, they do the TV call, and then you hear the radio, then the other radio call. I would love to put a mash together of Dan McDonald's call, which you hear on some of the clips from ESPN+. Then you need to put Jay's call on one and Ray Tucker's call on one.
Since we're on that subject, I know we've got the Troy men to talk about, but in regards to broadcasting, the NSMA Awards coming out on Monday, numerous congratulations. Number one, big guy, Frank Sulkowski, Georgia Sportscaster of the Year. What an honor for him. He has been the best in the Coastal Empire for a decade and a half, and now he's the best in the state of Georgia. Former voice of the Eagles, Chris Blair, Broadcaster of the Year in the state of Louisiana. J.D. Byers, the voice of South Alabama. He does the radio for Football on the Road, even though J.T. Crabtree has stepped in more in the radio role the last couple of seasons. But J.D., the Broadcaster of the Year in the state of Alabama for the second straight year.
There's a number of guys. I was going through the list on Monday when it came out in the afternoon. There's a number of guys that we've either crossed paths with or is in the Learfield IMG fraternity, but huge congratulations goes out to big guy J.D. Byers and Chris Blair because of obvious reasons. Yeah. We know them.
Yeah,
we like them.
They's good people.
Yes, they is. But the men of Troy coming into Hanner Fieldhouse on Friday and Saturday. What should we know about the men of Troy?
They're 6-5, 1-1 in league play, as we already talked about. Georgia State having COVID issues last week had prevented them from getting games 3-4 in conference play in. So their first four games in the Sun Belt are going to be on the road. They split with App State the weekend before. And I know the record is what it is for Scott Cross in year two, but I really like watching this team play. I think that they are the hardest playing team in the league. I think that they are buying in. They are just having some difficulties, a lot of the same difficulties that Georgia Southern is going through right now, because while Georgia Southern has 9 new guys, Troy has 11. 8 true freshmen. They had a mass exodus in the transfer portal after last year. They won just 9 games in Cross's first season. They went 5-13 in the league, tying with ULM for last for the second straight season. Little Rock had been last the year before. They've got talent. It's just a matter of, okay, I want you to play this way. They're going to shoot their threes. They're going to be up-tempo. They're just not making what they're shooting. They're last in the league in offense, field goal percentage, and threes. Defensively, they try to level things out by all the charges they take, and they've taken more charges by far than anybody else in the league. That's part of who they are. That's part of what Georgia Southern is. Eagles are averaging a charge a game. Troy has trumped that. They're averaging about three charges per game. The guy that I love to watch play, and he is my favorite player on an opposing team in this league, is Nick Stampley. 6'6 lefty. He's not 6'6, just like Coy Simmons. We had Coy Simmons a few years ago. Coy was not 6'8". He might have been 6'4 on a good day. But Stampley is undersized. He plays like a monster. He's outstanding on the offensive glass. He creates opportunities around the rim. He's improved his three-point shot. And Barry actually told me a story last week about Stampley, and this might have been something that came up on their coach's show. Scott Cross has watched Stampley shoot before just in an empty gym with nobody around him. It wasn't really a practice setting. He was shooting 100 threes. Now, he said that most in college are going to make somewhere between 50 and 60. If there's nobody around you and you're a decent shooter, NBA guys will make somewhere around 85 to 90. I don't know if you saw the video of Steph Curry the other day, but he made 106 consecutive threes from the same spot.
I've made 106 threes in my life.
More than five consecutive minutes, same spot, 106 threes in a row for Steph Curry. Played at Davidson. We all tie it together. But for Stampley, Cross said on the show, the day that he watched him, Stampley made 80 of 100 threes.
Wow.
For a guy that was 4 of 33 last year and someone that's only about 32% this year, so it's proof that he can do it. But when it's in an actual game, having the confidence and the opportunities to do it, it's going to make him even more difficult to handle. No, he's a senior, so he's not going to have many more chances unless he exercises that 2021 season. He's so tough, and I really, really enjoy watching him play.
Scott Cross is a guy that we've talked about for a couple of years at a couple of different stops. Again, was the head coach at UT Arlington before making his way to Troy. And he's somebody that, along the same cloth of a Keith Richard, that is a lot of fun to talk about, see, met him a couple of times, and he's just somebody that, outside of the times where Georgia Southern is lining up against him, he is somebody that you 100% cheer for.
Yeah, anybody that has helped contribute to the wardrobe of Josh Sowers, the voice of the Mavericks, is okay with me.
Josh and Nick White were having a little battle of who had the better wardrobe.
Well, they were going back and forth between who could take the selfies, too. I mean, Josh is going to win that one more often than not, but and Nick's
got the
longer
head arms.
I mean, Nick's got the body.
Yeah. But he took Josh out a snowbank earlier.
Yes. Scott Cross, though, outstanding guy. Some of those games between the Eagles and the Mavericks were high energy, very, very entertaining. I remember the game when they came to Statesboro my first year, and that look, there's probably four or five atmospheres that I could specifically describe to you since I got here in 15. The second half of that Arlington game my first year, that place was nuts.
Yeah.
And I don't know specifically why. I mean, Eric Neal contributed to it a little bit with those that were sitting courtside, you know, when you can have people sitting courtside. But for whatever reason, the second half of that game, that place was just on constant sizzle. It was awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see Scott Cross go up against him as Georgia Southern takes on the Trojans of Troy on Friday. It'll be a 6 o'clock tip-off inside Hanner Fieldhouse. Saturday, 3 p.m., the tip-off. Georgia Southern women again on the road to Trojan Arena to take on the Trojans of Troy. 7 o'clock, the tip-off on Friday. 5 o'clock, the tip-off on Saturday. That's Eastern time. We've talked about the Saturday games can start no later than 4, and that's in whatever time zone you're in. We're in Central Time, so it starts at 5.
You're in Central Time.
I'm in Central Time. Well, not yet, but
you will be in Central Time.
Correct.
So potentially by the time somebody listens to this, you will be en route to or comfortable in Central Time.
I hope comfortable.
Well, you only have two spots in Troy where you're going to be comfortable at, and they're right across the street from each other.
That's a very good point.
Unless they have changed the chairs at Trojan Arena, which you may be announcing from a suite, by the way. I'm not sure how they have the radio set up.
We're not in a suite. I asked that question, though, because I've seen Barry McKnight calling a game from a suite, but I don't think I'm at the level of Barry McKnight
quite
yet.
He looks like an offensive coordinator when they put the video on him. What are you doing on that eye?
But I think we are up on concourse level.
Okay.
So we are right around where the same level they have the Hall of Fame and
beautiful Hall of Fame.
Yes. So we are concourse level. Talked with Mike Hammett from Louisiana Monroe that has made the trip, and he said that it is a very fine setup.
We don't go there until the month of February, but I've said this before. That is my favorite arena, a favorite visiting arena in this league. It is a perfect size. It is amazing how they put it all together. You could just go and sit there and be fine.
One thing that we haven't talked a whole lot about on this podcast is with, of course, COVID messing everything up this year, it's changed where we have to broadcast from a lot of places. And JT Crabtree, Lord help him, he was in Coastal this week.
Oh, where would they put him there?
Apparently, they are bench side, and a lot like at Hanner, up on the second level, up on risers.
Okay.
But he sent me a picture, and he has half a table, and they have the plastic dividers in front of you, beside you, on either side. He goes, am I in a fish tank?
Is he taking his written driver's test?
Apparently.
We had to Conway in, I want to say, 3 weeks. We got Troy this coming weekend. Then we go to South. No, Coastal comes in.
Yeah,
that
we'll be
weekend.
Heading to Coastal.
Okay, so that'll be in February too.
It's going to be interesting to see the different places that we have to broadcast from.
Yeah, for those that haven't heard us talk about the HTC Center, it's small.
Yeah, it's tight. You've got the glass from the gym that overlooks the court.
That's right.
They have a very loud fire alarm.
Okay. In Boone, since I'll prep you for this, you don't go up there until the last week of February. Second level.
Okay.
You are higher than 3,333 feet. I think I made that joke each day.
I like it.
And the table that we would usually sit at, that's opposite scores table, opposite benches, is empty. And there were only 85 people at the game. Well, what they capped it at 85 because they decided each player would be allotted two tickets, and then they tacked on 25 donors, alumni, anybody that they could let in because of the statutes and regulations up in North Carolina.
See, a couple of weeks ago when women's basketball was down in Mobile, it was a pretty nice setup. It was almost like a full stage, a little bit higher than we are in Hanner, but still opposite the floor from the bench.
We will be there next weekend.
Well, you have a very fine setup. And you've got the South Alabama photographers to your left. Then a couple of seats down, you've got J.D. Byers and Pat Greenwood doing the ESPN Plus call in the middle, because, of course, they have to be at center court, those fancy TV people.
Yeah.
And then you'll have J.T. Crabtree with his GoPro set up on the other end. But the worst one so far has got to be the third, well, now fourth floor of the Georgia State Sports Arena.
Yeah, there's a chance that podcast the week after is going to be must listen to.
Because you and I will hit it both in the same week.
That's right. Thankfully, it's only one.
Yeah, thank goodness.
It's just one.
Because I almost knocked myself out, because on the fourth floor, we're at the top of the fourth floor. And so they have their production booth up at the top that almost hangs over a couple of the stands. We're right underneath that. And when I say right underneath it, when I stood up to interview Coach Howard, I hit my head on the booth because I forgot it was there. And I don't know who was in more danger of falling over, me because I hit my head, or Larry Ward that he was laughing at me.
All right, you do know that I'm significantly shorter than you are.
You would still hit your head.
All right.
Chris Davis would hit his head.
I think he's got me, though.
Does he?
Because people have asked me this. And look, I don't know how tall other people are exactly. I'm horrible at estimating. I do think he has me by about an inch.
Ooh.
We haven't done the whole back-to-back deal, but everybody keeps asking when we're going to play one-on-one. And
one more random tangent that I want to go on. Coach Berg talked about it leading into the season, about the night before a game. he does games between different people on...
On the travel party, that's
on the
right.
travel party.
Yep.
Is he still doing those?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been in a game yet?
Don't you think I would have talked about it if I was?
Well, I would have thought so, unless you lost, because if I went on and lost, I wouldn't have brought it up.
No, I'm a man. I'll own up to it. If I lose, I lose.
Okay.
Look, I'm trust me, I'm an announcer. I used to be an athlete. I'm not an athlete anymore. I'll tell a funny story.
Well, former assistant coach for women's basketball, Alex Stewart, and I would pretty much go one-on-one after every shoot-around, and yeah, I would tell you if I won, and if you hadn't heard it by now, there's a reason.
Who have been the first? Oh, the last one was strength coach Brandon Lee versus Chris Shumate. And remember, Shumate Ooh. Played overseas. This was awesome. I wasn't there for this because I went to go see Harrison battle right before the end of practice. And apparently on the – Brandon scored – they always played it too. On the first possession, Brandon took the lead. Shumate gets the basketball. Brandon takes a charge. It's a bona fide charge, too. It was no flop. The team's going nuts. He's getting the ball. He's got a chance to win. Then Shumate scored the next two buckets. I mean, Shumate's a baller now. Shumate's a 1,000-point scorer at Murray State, played in the USBL, played overseas. He's real deal when it comes to ball. But that was pretty funny.
How do they pick who is in?
I think it's totally random because another one of them, when we were on our way to Florida, we stopped at Coastal Georgia in Brunswick to practice en route to Miami for the multi-team event. And one of them was Nick Sparacio, and Brian Berg can't pronounce Sparacio's last name, so it comes out something differently. And I said, does he know how to say your name? He said, he gets closer each time. And he played one of the managers, and they played it too. There were only three shots in the game. They all were good, but Nick lost to the manager.
Oh.
So Nick hasn't heard the end of it since then.
Oh,
and I think they've played each other twice this year. Wyatt may have played somebody, but I can't remember.
I want to see you against Wyatt Sykes.
But see, I have a medical issue where I'm unable to participate fully in this activity.
It's only Wyatt. I'm not telling you to go up against Shumate.
Right now, I think a stool would beat me.
I've told you before, the reason I gave up basketball was in the sixth grade. I scored 2 points all year, and it was for the other team.
Yeah,
and
I realized
that was time to hang it up.
But look, you got my word. If I could make the stipulations meet to what my knee can handle, then I will participate, and I will gladly tell you the story after it happens.
Beautiful. We might need to Facebook Live it.
Because Jared Benko's asked me a couple times, when are you and Chris playing? When are you and Chris playing? And I know we've got a Tuesday talk a little bit later on where I'm going to be over at his office getting the questions from Eagle Nation. And I'd rather that not come up.
I'm sure it will.
Maybe Bob McKessie will ask her.
Brant from Metter. That'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Georgia Southern against Troy on the basketball court. Inside Hanner Fieldhouse, 6 o'clock the tip-off on Friday, 3 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. Georgia Southern women inside Trojan Arena, 7 o'clock the tip on Friday, 5 o'clock on Saturday. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.